Normalize black love. That's part of my healing too. Maybe we got away from black love due to lack of opportunities, and we tend to put money before love. You know what I'm saying? Before our community, before our values. You know what I'm saying? Let's heal and get back to that. You know, and I'm manifesting that everybody listening to this, you know, get everything they want and find out the power of manifestation. Money is always going to be there. And if you chase your dreams, the money will come and you won't even know it, you know?
What I am completely is worth somebody loving me, and I don't have to manipulate someone into giving me attention or validating me.
A lot of these men be crazy. I'm not going to lie to you. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes ghosting is safe for women. It's a safer option. A gentleman, a man, right, does not expect sex. You should not expect sex.
If you really want a beautiful black man, you can have that. I don't want black women to feel unworthy or like come from a place of lack.
She don't choose everybody, and she's happened to be choosing you to have sex with. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean that she's a hoe. And he doesn't look at you differently because you gave it to him early or later.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Inside Out Podcast. I'm your host, Yemoria Wright. The intention of this podcast is for you to enrich your life with behind-the-scenes interviews from entrepreneurs and thought leaders who are ready to keep it real about their journey thus far and what making an impact looks like to them from the inside out. Enjoy.
Here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Inside Out Podcast. It has been a while, and I have my first man, Ronnie Love, here today. I am so excited. I have not had a man on this podcast yet. Ronnie, thank you for being
here. Thank you for bringing me on. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, we are going to be talking about discipline, boxing, and black love today. Discipline, boxing, black love.
My three favorite.
So, Ronnie, tell us about yourself. Who are you? Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Ronnie Love, the leader of the Bruise Crew. We got a little team of fighters that we all fight out. I'm an amateur boxer right now from Highbridge, New York, in the Bronx. I'm currently a Harlem resident right now. And I'm a trainer at Everybody Fights. And I'm still, I'm still an amateur boxer, but will soon be pro.
Holla at that. And Ronnie, like, tell me more about, you know, a little bit of your laurels. Like, what have you done?
Okay, I mean, I graduated from Morgan State University. Shout out to MSU, Go Bears. I played college football there. I've pretty much been boxing for about 7 years now. I've boxed with some of the best pros that you know. My trainer was Bobby Miles. He's a legend in boxing. You know, got a marketing degree. Black man, tall, handsome, single, please. Holla at me, somebody, please.
Stop. You need to focus.
The market. It's bad.
Stop.
All right. We're going to focus.
Now, don't be saying that and then this podcast airs and you got all these people hollering at you that you done summoned to and asked them to holler at you.
All right, wait. Okay, so we can edit that out, right? I didn't get my little Instagram handle yet. We can edit that out. I was just joking, guys. Just joking.
Too funny. Okay, so Ronnie, thank you for being here again. Talk to me about how you fell into boxing. Did boxing find you? Did you find
You know, me personally, I was always a football guy. I love football. My favorite player was Michael Vick. Since I was born, when I first seen Barry Sanders doing amazing things in 1991, I was like two. I was born in 89. But when I seen him doing amazing things, I just wanted to play football. So, you know, I used to talk to I grew up in a single family household. My father was in jail for 20 plus years, part of the RICO things and the RICO cases and, conspiracy and things like that. But, you know, I was in a single family household, so my mom didn't really know too much about football, but she knew that I wanted to play football. So, you know, she would do her things, try to find me different teams to play on. Mm-hmm. When I was a toddler, my mom was dating this guy, this pro boxer named Stephon Johnson. And Stephon, he actually fought Roy Jones Jr. in Roy Jones' second fight. Mm. But Stephon, you know, he gave me my first pair of boxing gloves and he gave me my first football. And, you know, he wasn't really teaching me boxing or anything while I was growing up. I was just around him and, you know, he was just a guy that my mom dated. So when I turned 10, Stephon and my mom were no longer dating. This was a long time ago. They were no longer dating. But when I turned 10 or 11, I think Stephon wound up passing away in a ring due to ring complications. I think he had bleeding on the brain, and boxing is a very, very, very crooked game. So he actually wasn't cleared to fight in one state. So what his management team, they had took him to another state and cleared them to fight, and he wound up fighting, and he died. He died in the ring. He collapsed in the ring, and he fell into a coma, and that's how he passed away. This is when I was younger, like 10 or 11. So what my mom did, you know, when she said that when she went to see Stephon, you know, even though Stephon was in a coma, she could see tears rolling down his eyes from, you know, just things that she was telling him. What that made my mom do is she actually started to really become concerned with boxers and their health and the things that boxers go through and how they get taken advantage of. I mean, we all know the story of Mike Tyson and all these boxers who have had millions and then come back with nothing, you know. So she just became really passionate about that. And she did it with female boxing. So she wound up starting Honeybee Boxing Entertainment, you know, in the name of Stephon, but she was the first black female boxing promoter in New York. The first black female boxing promoter in New York. So what she did was she put on an exhibition is not a real fight, but what she did, it's like a practice fight. Sometimes they use bigger gloves and headgear or whatever, but she had an exhibition in front of the Harlem State Building on 125th, and she was actually the first person to ever put a ring out there and do that. But you know, I'm 11, 12, around all these legends, Sugar Ray Leonard, Iran Barkley, Mike Tyson, just all these legends, Don King, anybody you could think of, I've been around them. But I really didn't even care or pay attention. I didn't know who these guys were. I was just football. That's all I wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, my mom, she had some really good female boxers on her promotional team that Layla Ali was actually scared to fight. Yeah, you know, she had some female boxers that was really interesting to watch and just people that was just knocking out men, female boxers that was knocking out men. So they weren't no joke at all. But like I said, I was totally still focused on football. I went to high school, played football at Cardinal Spellman High School in the Bronx. Then I went to Morgan State. I walked on to the team and I played football there for about 3 years or so like that. I graduated and, you know, as a college graduate, I was just having so much trouble finding work. I just couldn't find work anywhere. I was applying here. I was doing this. I was going to the temp agencies. It was just hard to really find work as a college graduate. So, you know, I kind of gave up and I was just, my mom had opened a flea market in Harlem and I was just helping her at the flea market, making a little money here and there. Mm-hmm. One day, as we were working the market, one of my mother's friends who were training her fighters and helping her build her boxing business happened to live by the area, this guy named Bobby Miles. That was my trainer. Bobby used to walk by, older guy, maybe in his 80s. I used to see Bob all the time, and we used to talk about boxing here and there. You know, he would go on about his business, whatever. I haven't seen Bob since I was a kid, you know, since my mother was doing the female boxing thing. So I seen Bobby, and Bobby was, you know, I seen him one day, and I was like, hey, Bob, you know, I'm thinking about boxing because I really couldn't find any work. And I was just like, you know, I still want to do something athletic. So I'm thinking about boxing. So Bob looked at me, you know, he's an older, serious guy, one of them guys from Harlem. So he looked at me and he said, man, you don't want to box. You need to just stick with your marketing degree, focus on that. You don't want to box. This is a rough game, and boxing is definitely a rough game. But I was serious, you know. I was like, no, nah, Bob, you know, I want to box. Put me in there. So he said, you know, when he comes back from Virginia, he's going to get me in the gym and see what I got. You know, mm-hmm. Bobby, he made world champions, numerous world champions. Iron Barkley, Davey Moore, so many guys I could keep going down the list. What Bob did, Bob left, he came back, he said, Ronnie, you ready to go to the gym? I was like, yeah, we can go. We went ahead to the gym. We were supposed to be training at a gym in Harlem called El Barrio, but it wound up closing down. So we wound up going all the way to the Bronx at Morris Park Boxing Club, which is Aaron Davis' gym. Aaron Superman Davis was the first gym we went to. And my very first day, when I took off my stuff and got ready to change, Aaron has a wall full of 1,000 boxes, like 1,000. Hmm. You can't even, it's so many boxes there. So where I happened to hang up my stuff, it was a very small picture that said, RIP Stephon Johnson.
Wow.
And you wouldn't really know who Stephon was because Stephon wasn't like a big name boxer or like a real popular guy. You wouldn't know who Stephon was unless you knew who he was. And when where I just happened to hang my stuff, it was just kind of like a sign, you know, that was just like, hey, maybe this is what you need to be doing. You know what I'm saying? That was my very first day. We wasn't even going to train there. So I said, all right, you know, let me take that as a sign. And one thing people got to do, listen to signs about anybody, about people, places, things. If you get a sign, listen to it. The universe does not lie. The universe is not a lot. You know, so we finished our day of training. I didn't really have no gear or nothing. I was like, damn, boxing is hard. And I was a D1 athlete. And I thought, I'm like, man, boxing is hard. But I didn't really have any gear or anything like that. You know, I was using the stuff that Bobby brought up there. So, you know, I was about to just quit boxing and, you know, just do something else, whatever. So then, you know, I had stopped looking for temp work because the temp agencies wasn't calling me back. So then one day the lady called me back and said, Ronnie, you know, I got a job for you, you might be interested in. Because I was doing little jobs here and there, fixing computers, clerical work, things like that. So she said, Ronnie, I got a job you may be interested in. There's a company called Everlast. Have you ever heard of Everlast? She doesn't know our box. So this is what I'm saying. Signs, people, signs. Wow. Everlast is the biggest boxing company, producer of boxing gear, period. So I'm like, yeah, I heard of Everlast. So she's like, okay, real casual, right? She's like, okay, well, they need somebody to come down there and set up their computers because they was moving their offices. So I said, all right, I went down there. So the lady who I was reporting to, right, at Everlast, her name, guess what her name was? Her name was Ronnie, right?
Wow.
So that's sign number two. So we down there, we working, doing whatever we doing. So now my time is up, so I'm leaving. Boxing was expensive. So I was like, you know, I don't really have the gear. I'm not going to do anything. Like, excuse my language. So I wound up leaving.
You good?
and when I left, they was like, actually, before you go, Ronnie, we're throwing out all this boxing stuff. Go ahead and take what you want. So I went from having nothing in boxing to about to quit because I didn't have the money to buy the equipment to everything. I had things that pro boxers don't have. So I was like, clearly somebody is telling me to do this, you know? So I just, what I did at that moment was decide to go full steam ahead. And ever since then, I'm on a train with no brakes, you know, I'm full steam ahead.
That is. Okay. We're going to hold right there for a quick message from our sponsor, but this is really dope, Ronnie. Like we're going to hold real quick. We're going to hold. Okay. We are back. Ronnie, would you call yourself a master manifester? Like, or what? How are these things unfolding?
I wouldn't call myself a master manifester yet because I don't have a house on the hills in Cali, and I haven't driven up with my Lamborghini yet. But it's coming.
Okay.
It's coming. I would say that manifesting is the most important power that we don't recognize. Mm. And we need to start paying attention to it because we actually have powers. We really have powers. It's crazy because a lot of people don't know, or we get so, you know, so tied up with our daily things that we're doing that we neglect how powerful we really are.
And what do you think that, you know, from what you've seen and what boxing has taught you, what life has taught you, what do you think the one thing that Black men, Black boys should know about themselves when it comes to their
power? I think that Black boys should just know that even if they don't know what their power is, just know that they have a power, you know, and to not be afraid to try. Just try. Just do it. You know what I'm saying? Don't be afraid to do something because you don't know how to do it. Because if you really want to do something, our power as Black men, to me, is determination. Just the sheer will to go through anything and get what we want. That's in our DNA. That's in our ancestry. And to get through whatever it is, whether it was horrible treatment or, you know, slavery, we got through it. We got through it through willpower and determination. And I think that's our biggest power.
What do you think is Black women's power?
Black women. Oh man, Black women got so many powers. I mean, you guys bring life. That's that's the biggest power of all. Black women have so much power, you know? And I really tell everybody, I think Black women run the world. I don't think men run the world. Y'all control us with just your beauty. A woman steps in a room with a bunch of men and it's quiet. Everybody, all eyes on her. Black women are just beautiful. They're golden, they shine, they're determined, they work hard. They work harder than some of the Black men. I could go on. I could list the superpowers of Black women all day. All day.
I love that. So what did boxing teach you about your superpower? Did you know that you had it before?
Actually, I didn't know that I had it. Boxing taught me a lot. Boxing taught me that if I put my mind at anything, I can do it. Boxing taught me to not be afraid of anything. Don't be afraid of people. Boxing taught me to be prepared, the power and preparation, you know, training and just mentally. Boxing also taught me about mental preparation, just, you know, just it taught me so much. I can just go on, you know, but boxing definitely enlightened me on my true powers and capabilities, mentally and spiritually.
And you are also, because I've been seeing you post on Instagram, you out in the parks training the kids.
Yes, I'm out in the parks. You know, I have a big passion to give back to my community and just, you know, give these kids something to look up to or something to do so they're not out in the street. I remember when I was a kid, you know, growing up in a single family household, I wasn't able to always go out on the street. I didn't always do the correct things because I really didn't have any role models. I didn't have anybody to look up to. I didn't have any way to take my energy out on. So, you know, we were doing stupid stuff like making bean shooters and breaking cab windows because we were bored, you know? You know, we were just doing stupidness where we could have got tremendously hurt, you know? But, you know, today I just think it's a little more violent. The climate that we live in is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, our kids have more energy than ever, you know, and they gotta burn it. You know, we got COVID. We dealing with racism. We dealing with just so many crazy things around the world.
People say multiple pandemics.
Multiple pandemics.
And we really do. And as a Black person in America, that taking that time for discipline, self-care, and just sharpening your mind is really key to being able to survive because, you know, so y'all, me and Ronnie and I, we talked like 30 minutes before this interview even started. And he had the nerve to ask me how I was doing. And I was like, I'm good. He's like, well, no, how, like, you know, asking me essentially how my spirit's doing, which I appreciate, Ronnie, because a lot of people just take, if I'm like, oh, I'm great. They're like, okay, cool. But how are like you? Well, I'm
like, how are you really doing?
Like, how are you really doing? How are you really though? And I think that what you're doing is important for youth because it does allow them to let out that. Also, y'all, Ronnie got me. So I did kickboxing, you know, back in the day, kickboxing classes, you know. But Ronnie got me into boxing. I could not. I've done many workout classes, many. I've done all types of at home work, anything you could think of. I probably dibbled and dabbled. And the only thing that can get me up in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning is boxing. And that is like proven. I don't know why I can get up for boxing, but it just feels so good to my soul getting up for those classes.
Yes.
And I miss it, but
you sure do.
Yeah. It just, I can get up for boxing. I can do it.
Yes. We had you in the gym. We had you in the gym doing your thing.
And everybody was looking at me crazy. Damn. Like, you go to morning classes? And I was like, yeah, to start the day, like without, like just everybody's asleep. So nobody's bothering me and, right. You know, texting exactly. me. And to start the day, just me, myself and I, are you kidding me? That meant that anything else that happened in the day, whatever, I had me time. I started to feel stronger in my body, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also think that like for curvier women like myself, it's nice to have something that helps you own your curves and not feel like
right. You're
just trying to lean out necessarily.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, well, I remember you telling me, you know, you mentioned the importance, we were at the job and you said, I'm paraphrasing, but you said you can create whatever kind of body, like you can create your body. You just have to understand your body.
Exactly. You know? Right. Very true. Very true. Even that's the same for anything. You can create your mental. You just have to understand your mental. You can create anything mm-hmm. you want. The power of manifestation, mm-hmm. right? The power mm-hmm. of manifestation. That's a big power that we have. You can mm-hmm. create it. You just got to know it.
So other than the Lamborghini, what are you manifesting right now? What are you working
on? Oh, man. Okay. I'm manifesting a program that I can bring free boxing to teens under 18 that don't have the resources or facilities to go out and actually want to do their thing, you know, want to chase their boxing dream or just want to get in shape. I'm manifesting a beautiful black queen in a beautiful black family. You know, that's later on down the line. I'm manifesting to be undisputed cruiserweight champ when I turn pro. I'm definitely manifesting that. We coming for all that, you know, and I'm manifesting that everybody listening to this, you know, get everything they want and find out the power of manifestation.
I you know, just I'm thinking about this right now. I don't even use the word coincidence so much anymore. I use alignment. I use, like, I'm realizing the coincidence. I really don't believe in that anymore. I'm not in the way that I did, where it was like, whoa, how uncanny. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh my goodness. Oh.
Listen,
you know, and I'm paying attention and learning to be present with myself and even learning triggers and all of these things, like you said, the mind, you know, also, you know, I would ask for you, how has boxing reshaped or informed the way you see distractions?
You know, I was always a person that, I never really realized that I had distractions because I never had anything that I really had as a major priority. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, we all have little distractions. Like, you know, I guess let's say we were in school and supposed to be doing homework, but SpongeBob is on, or we want to play PlayStation, you know, that was like little distractions, but like big distractions where they get involved with your goals. Let's say, you know, one thing about boxing is it gave me a goal, and my goal was to be better, was to be a world champion, was to earn money and success for my family. So what I started realizing was distractions were maybe if I was dating someone that wasn't super supportive, or, you know, maybe I started to put money before my dreams. And this is what a lot of people do. And that's a distraction. Put money before your dreams. I mean, money is always going to be there. And if you chase your dreams, the money will come and you won't even know it, you know?
So you won't even realize.
So, you know, boxing just gave me a goal to realize what true distractions were, you know? Mm-hmm. Partying.
It illuminated it because of the discipline, the partying. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It just brightened everything because I knew I had to be disciplined. If I know we about to go, if I know we about to go spar the number two amateur, the number two heavyweight amateur in the country or in New York, then I ain't trying to get beat up. So I gotta keep my conditioning up, right? So am I gonna choose to run or am I gonna choose to party or hang out with this girl? Like, yeah, I wanna do the latter, of course. But being that I realized priorities now, which is another thing that boxing teach you. Any sport with real discipline, it can teach you what priorities are real quick, real quick. You know, if I know if I don't want to get beat up, I got to be in shape. So I'm sorry, we can't go on a date today because I really have to do this run. And I hope you understand.
And I don't want to get beat up.
Exactly. So a lot of women don't get that. They're like, well, what you mean? Like, why would you put the gym before me? And I understand. But you ain't taking these punches for me. You ain't taking these punches for me. When these punches come raining down, I'm gonna tag you in so you can take them. Since because I wasn't in shape because you wanted to hang out, right? It's your fault. So now you gotta help me fight, right? Ain't nobody gonna agree to that. Who gonna agree to that?
Ain't nobody. And also, let's be honest, it's like, I'm sure if we're having that conversation, part of what attracts you to me is my discipline, my physique, boxing.
Exactly.
And you want me to, like, which one do you want? You want me to win?
Exactly. How I look like coming back home, like, looking like Martin when he fought Tommy Hurt. Remember Martin had all them knots on his head?
Yes.
My phrase is, don't worry, I'm going to come back pretty. That's my friend, okay?
I love that.
I'm going to come back pretty if you distracting me. How?
Don't worry, I'm going to come back pretty.
Don't worry, I'm going to come back pretty. I tell people that all the time. I tell my mother that all the time. Before my great-grandma died, you know, God rest her soul, I said to her, she said, oh, right. You know, she's from down south. I'm Alabama. Mm-hmm. So she said to me, oh, Ronnie, you're doing boxing now? And I was like, yeah, Grandma, you know, I like it. I kind of got a thing for it. You know, I'm pretty good. And she's like, well, don't be letting them hit your face, your handsome face now. So ever since she would say that, I'd be like, don't worry, Grandma, I'm going to come back pretty.
I love that phrase. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And also I can't help but see as a metaphor, even for those who, you know, aren't out actually in, you know, having fights, you know, boxing,
right.
I can see, it's still though, like life, you need to eliminate those distractions so that you can show up where you need to show up.
Very true.
Like,
very true.
That's the lesson, you know, like, eliminate those distractions and that can go to the friends like, oh, I haven't heard from you. Well, I'm focused on whatever, you know, my dreams are. Don't worry. I'm going to come back pretty.
We're going through the red carpet.
What?
Exactly.
I love that. Ooh, that's good.
You could take it for anything career wise.
I'll quote you. You know, listen, I love that.
You gotta go through the mud sometimes, but we gotta prepare to go through the mud, right? So if I'm distracted, I'm not prepared to go through the mud, how am I gonna come back looking good? You know, because we all go through things, but we don't all look like what we went through. And why is that? Because some people are more prepared to go through things than other people are.
You preaching? It's okay. Go ahead.
I'm trying to not turn into eat a hip hop preacher on here. You know,
no,
what I mean?
Man.
But
good.
But listen, this is just my mental. This is how I think. You know, I mean, we all don't look like what we've been through, and that's to no fault of our own, but to the preparation that we may have been allowed to put in due to circumstances or. Maybe the preparation that we didn't want to put in just because we didn't want to do it, you know? Or maybe we weren't able to, you know? Who knows? But preparation is key for everything.
Preparation is key for everything. I love it. So we will segue to Black Love, Ronnie Love. Oh, man. I know that's been like jokes forever. Yeah, this is how we even got started. When I was just like, Ronnie, can I invite you on my podcast? Because we was going down the rabbit hole of African Intimacy. I'm going to quote the book. Did you ever get that book? I sent you the link.
I know you sent me the link. I didn't get it. I read it. I was reading up on it online. It's definitely a good book. Definitely. And I'm going to get it. The spirit. Yeah. I'm going to get it.
Spirit of Intimacy. Let's talk about Black love.
Let's talk about
what does it mean to you? I mean, you've already hit on it a little bit because you're manifesting your queen and your beautiful Black family with your little mini Ronnies,
right,
you know?
Right, right. So. They both gonna have hands, so watch out. Girl or boy, they both gonna have hands, so don't act up.
I love that. I love that. What does it mean to you though?
What is Black
as a man? Because you said you grew up with your mom, single family household. What is loving a Black woman look like to you when you find that woman?
Loving the Black woman to me is understanding what the Black woman has gone through, what Black people go through. And kind of having compassionate understanding, I think that it is a responsibility of Black men everywhere to create beautiful Black families because we were separated, you know, pretty much. So I feel like Black love is our responsibility, and we get through Black love by loving a woman regardless, supporting a woman, you know, physically, financially, spiritually, mentally, you know, that's basically what Black love is to me.
I'm going to assume that most of our listeners understand what you mean by when you said we were separated. Can you dig deeper?
Sure. You know, I think that slavery has, you know, the generational trauma, as they say, slavery has, you know, had a profound effect on Black people in general. And I think that the Black family started its separation from slavery, you know. And, you know, I'm going to speed up maybe, 380 years or so now to when we started finally getting, you know, some type of freedom to bring that Black love back. I seen it was actually coming back, you know, like in the 50s, like how our grandparents dated. They were more so concerned with love and family values and things like that. So I would say from the 50s to like the 60s, maybe 70s, it was really about the power of Black people and Black love, togetherness, family values, monogamy for some people. In the 70s, it kind of started to get a little crazy. In the 80s, when our dads who were alive in the 80s, you know, they were around a whole lot of money, you know, due to drugs and things like that. A lot of our fathers were hustlers back in the day, you know, selling different things here and there. But I think that's when the values kind of started to change, when drugs got introduced into our communities, and we didn't have the opportunities. So we turned to drugs, and now we went from being broke and struggling and couldn't provide for our families to having millions of dollars and not really knowing what to do with it. But the damage of that was, you know, our values kind of started to change. So because there wasn't no opportunity and we need money to provide and live the lifestyles we wanted to live, we kind of put love on the back burner. And that's, to me, when it started with men. So women, you know, they still wanted to be loved. They still wanted to be in these relationships, and, you know, where it was, what's the word I'm looking for? Where it was positive. It wasn't toxic. You know, they just wanted to be in these relationships where they felt loved and understood, and they could live these lifestyles that they wanted to live. But a lot of men, they weren't concerned about that at the time. So, you know, to the 80s and 90s. So personally, and what I think, in 2000s is when women started to be like, well, shit, men don't care about us. We need to start caring about us. And And then women started to not really care about love too much. Like, they cared about it, but they were starting to be on the back burner to them as well. You know, which is leading us now to this generation, where I think that this generation and this values in terms of love and togetherness is totally, totally thrown off. It seems like everybody's looking for a come up, or scared that somebody's gonna hurt this person or that. It's just crazy. Yeah. It's a mess. Yeah.
Perfect. There's a lot of healing.
A lot of
internally.
Healing. A lot of healing.
Yeah, that needs to be done. And I think that our generation is, while there's also a lot of reactionary and perpetuating pain and trauma, there are a lot of people that are being called to heal. And I think part of that is because a lot of people in our generation are digging deeper into African ancestry and the spirituality beyond just the religion that we were taught. And I think connecting people a little bit deeper to spirit in a way that they weren't before.
Right.
I think it's preparing people a little bit differently to be able to heal the epigenetic wounds. Because what you're saying, I hear, yeah, that trauma, that epigenetic trauma that has been imprinted and that continues on and on. I saw a little boy on my block last week as I was packing, and he wasn't listening to, it was either his dad, it could have been his uncle or grandpa, like a young grandpa, but regardless, it was a male figure. And he wasn't listening, was playing with some other kids down the way, and the man grabbed him, and he called him, like, you get over here. And he grabbed him, and he started just, like, spanking him on the sidewalk. And now, while this is something that it's like, okay, yeah, he was being bad, whoop-de-woo, as I've begun to do work and really think about differently how we are raising our Black kids, I realized, man, that's traumatic and embarrassing.
Though. Yeah.
So what happens when a lot of the ways that we were disciplined were also passed down from slavery.
Right. Right. Very true.
You know?
Very true.
Like, you might get beat, like, a lot of the ways. And we relate a good kid to, well, I got my butt spanked, you know what I'm
very
saying?
True.
And I still have the condition, like, you know, looking like, oh, they just got their butt spanked. But trying to also, because I got spanked when I was little, and I assume that's why I made good choices.
Right.
But is, you know, we're reimagining a world where that possibly isn't what needs to happen to make our Black kids be safe and make good choices.
Right. Right. I think that we, you know, we had to kind of force them to listen a little bit more, just because of things that have went on within the Black community, where we may have needed a little bit extra something for them to listen to. But, you know, I totally understand where that's from. You know, getting hit with switches and whatever you could find, you know, iron cords and all that. So
You spoke about how Black love has changed.
Yes.
Do you think that there's any reckoning with women feeling, you know, I'm just gonna say it, women being like, Black men ain't shit. Men ain't shit. What is that term? What is that? Go ahead.
I heard the sister coming up. She's like, go ahead, what you got to say on this? All right, so we're gonna touch on that. Okay. So, like I said, you know, I mean, I understand where the sisters are coming from and how they feel, you know, and I understand why, I mean, like I said, I think it started from the 80s, where men just didn't care. They started to be more concerned about money than women, a woman's feelings, or, you know, if she was safe or not, you know, and maybe it spiraled out of control to the point where now Black women don't feel protected, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And I hear that. But I get so offended when I hear that, because my mother's a Black woman, and it's not just protecting Black women that we know, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, in today's world, I understand a lot of people don't want to get into stuff because a lot of people are scared. They don't know how to fight, you know what I'm saying? So they might not get into something that they don't have no business to, and thinking like, oh, they're going to shoot me, or whatever the case may be like that. But, I mean, I get it. I totally get why Black women don't feel protected, but I hate to hear that now, especially in today's climate where it's a lot of racism going on. So we need to look together. You know, I don't need black women going on social sites and saying, I don't feel protected as a black woman. Yeah, the black man needs to know that you don't feel protected, but I wish we could have these conversations in a privater place, you know, so we don't look like we're bickering at each other, you know, or it doesn't look like black women just don't like black men or always bashing black men, how some black men feel, you know? Mm-hmm. But I totally understand. I totally understand where it's coming from.
I agree that we need spaces. I don't think that it's, and I think a lot of people, some people might perceive that as, oh, you're trying to do like the keep it at home, you know, don't tell nobody. It's not that toxic version of keep minding your bit, like keeping it quiet. Right. It is like, can we have healing circle version?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's not the toxic, like, oh, don't tell nobody. It's not that. It's, can we heal internally? Because when we go, I think that I can't help but relate it to personal work. Your healing is not outward. It is inward.
Right.
So community healing is not outward. It goes inward. And projecting, while there, I do believe conversations happening on social are necessary because it brings us to the conversation we're even having. I do think that it might inadvertently contribute more to a toxic cycle than people realize.
Yes.
I don't think people realize sometimes how they're just continuing the cycle.
Yes.
I don't think
that's a place. I mean, it brings awareness to things, but I don't think that's a place for us to hash out our differences within our own race. If we're if we're talking about promoting black love and we're talking about the importance of a black family, I don't feel that we should look like we're bashing each other in front of company, quote unquote. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't really know if company has the same, what's the word I'm looking for? This same kind of, you know, intention that we have, you know? Maybe their intention is to divide and conquer us. You know, we really don't know. So it's not safe to talk about those issues on a social website. Only thing I want to see on social website is black love, black love, black love.
So then where do we talk about it?
I think that we need to, together, black women and men need to start forming spaces that actually are safe for us to come talk about it. Maybe we can, I don't know, have town hall kind of meetings and provide some incentive to make sure people come out. But I think that the healing starts with us. And we don't need to let people know, public know how fucked up we really are. Excuse my French.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Especially with the public, so to speak, quote, who started it in the very first place. Right. I know we all have free choice. We've been talking about that. But, and.
Oh, man, free choice. Free choice to put on a mask. You know, we do.
Right. You know, so I really like this. It's actually sparking an idea. I'm like, okay, I might need to take accountability of us having this conversation. Like, can we open up, you know, a Zoom where we do something like this and see what comes of it? Test it, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. And at the end of the day, we won't know what happens until we test it, you know?
Until we test it. Oh, don't be good. Okay. I'm gonna be like, yo, Ronnie.
I'm with it. I'm all for whatever is making my people better, strengthening my people, making us more healthy mentally, physically, making us feel more loved and treated with respect. I'm all with it. I'm with it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not with looking like fools in front of company, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Especially when we don't know who the enemy is. I mean, we know, but we don't really know.
But we don't really know.
Exactly.
You know? We're getting near the end, but before we get there, I want you to talk to me. I've seen therapists talk about this. Yeah. I have had conversations about this. Yeah. I want to know from you why you think men, and I know women do it too, but why men ghost women.
Okay. okay, so my eye wasn't necessarily in any of these situations. So don't assume, okay?
Y'all, that is a disclaimer. He is just talking. These are not his situations.
I'm just talking.
Don't be those.
No, so people get ghosted for different reasons. Sometimes, all right, so are we talking about ghosting a person that you know or ghosting a person that you just met? Or
let's say give me what you got. Okay, we can talk about it.
Okay, so honestly, I think it's safe to ghost a person that you don't really know. I mean, like, if y'all not really feeling the vibe, then I mean, hey, don't respond. I mean, do I really owe them any kind of explanation as to why I'm not interested? Do I really? That's an honest question. I'm just asking you.
Well, so here's the thing. I'll speak from a therapy side. I am not a licensed therapist. I am in therapy and I follow a lot of therapists.
Okay.
So from what they have posted and what I've understood in work is that ghosting can and does trigger abandonment wounds. Now, many people are not aware that they have. It's like, anger is an easier emotion, right? It's a secondary emotion.
Right.
But what it is actually could be triggering is an abandonment wound from a father who wasn't there, a mother who wasn't there, a baby, like abandonment. So you feel, so it's triggering, it's your inner child. It's hurting you like you were a kid.
That makes sense.
But you don't know it.
That makes sense. I mean, some people find it more comfortable for them to ghost rather than hurt a person's feelings or just get into an unnecessary altercation, because a lot of times people really don't like to hear the truth. So, and sometimes the truth isn't a nice thing to say all the time. Maybe, like, for instance, let's say I met you, we met on a dating site, and you have all face pictures, right? And you may like what you like, right? We gonna put it that way. You may like what you like. The person has all face pictures. Beautiful, beautiful person, right? You go to the date, and this person is like not your type, right? In terms of people like what they like, it's totally okay, right? But where do you say, you know what? You're just not, you're not my type because of this, right? Without hurting a person's feelings. How can you say that? So a lot of times, people just tend to go ghost. And even sometimes if you'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm not really interested. And maybe a person is like, well, why? Why aren't you interested? How about you tell me why? Instead of that, can be easier just to go ghost with some people, rather than to get into altercation or go back and forth.
Man,
you know? Nothing personal.
It's so complex though. It really is. It's something that's like, you know, ghosting, da da da, why it's wrong. But it is, it will require, I think, to, and this is where I think relationships are going in one way, and what we are even talking about with Black Love. It would require two people who are healed and healing to be able to be honest from get, meaning, I'm not going to try to manipulate you into liking me, but my whole physique or whatever is different than what you expected, right? And then it would require me knowing that I'm worthy as I am, so I don't have to lie in my photos.
So now, whose fault is that?
I think we have to take personal responsibility. It will require me to know. And a bit of, we're also, this is also of assuming that people are comfortable and are feel safe doing therapy, doing the work. You know, this is a different kind of frequency than some people are on.
Right.
But I do think that what it requires is feeling worthy enough to be honest. If we're talking about dating, you know, apps, whatever. Feeling worthy enough to be honest about who the heck you are from get. Right.
Right.
And then I think it is like for feeling like what I am completely is worth somebody loving me, and I don't have to manipulate someone into giving me attention or validating me. So that would be one. And then two, on the person who's perhaps the ghoster, it would require them to be to know how to communicate gently. So this is very communication.
Touchy. Very touchy.
This is worthiness in communication, right? Worthiness is, I'm not going to lie in the first place because I am worthy as I am.
Right.
And communication is if somebody is a liar or is misleading, to say, hey, I do like you. You know, the chemistry wasn't there for me, but I don't want you to think that that doesn't mean that there's not a person out there for you. And you can't guarantee that person's going to be able to receive that. But I think you can.
I've had that conversation with somebody before, okay. And it was a meltdown, to say the
least. It was a meltdown.
Yeah.
Oh.
Meltdown.
Isn't to say the least. You can't avoid the healing. You can't avoid the healing that needs to be done.
But sometimes you don't even know, you have no idea that you need to be healed. You have no idea.
Right.
You know, so it's like, does this person really know? Like, I'm just like being honest with them. Are you used to people not being honest with you? Do you prefer not being honest? How long are people not going to be honest with you before you feel like, hey, okay, these people aren't being honest with me? Do you go your whole life without that? Do you ruin relationships because you just don't know, you know, like, and maybe we could have been really good friends, but because I wasn't feeling you in that way, male or female, we're not only talking about body types. Maybe you go on with a person and the vibe is off, or maybe you go on with a person and you seem to be paying a little bit too much money to hang out every time. You know, who knows? Who knows what the situation is, but everybody likes what they like. You know what I'm saying? That was no shade to nobody, just a disclaimer out there, but everybody likes what they like. You know what I'm saying? So can I be honest with you and say what I don't like without you getting offended? That's when ghosting will disappear. That's when ghosting will disappear. Can I be honest with you enough to be like, okay, it didn't work out, but we can still be friends?
Wow.
And until that happens, people are going to feel more comfortable with ghosting, where opposed to telling the truth, you know, because just because I'm still respectful during a date or, you know, vibing or being sociable with you, you know, doesn't mean that I'm actually interested in you in that manner. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that we ain't have a good day. It's just that, you know, I don't like you for this reason. Do we tell people, hey, I'm not really interested in you for this reason? Or do we say, hey, I'm not really interested in you? And then when they ask, well, why? What's wrong with me? Maybe that person is used to getting whoever they want. Then that's when the arguments come into play, you know? And that's when ghosting becomes more safe than anything else. And even for women, like, some of these men, these men be crazy, okay? They be crazy. A lot of these men be crazy. I'm not going to lie to you. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes ghosting is safe for women. It's a safer option. Rather than going on a date with a dude and telling him, oh, I don't like you because your breath stinks. And he loses his fucking mind and shoots you now.
And says horrible things to you. Yeah, no, that's real. I mean, when men are catcalling, like, sometimes it's better to, I mean, it's always better for me to not acknowledge at all than to even say hi back.
First of all, with catcalling, I don't understand. You saying, yo, stink butt, ain't gonna make her turn around. Who wanna be called stink butt? Who wanna be called stink butt? Sugar foot. Oh no. Come on, fellas. Who wanna turn around? Are y'all expecting your mother to turn around? If your dad was like, yo, stink butt. If you ain't expecting your mother to turn around, don't yell it to these ladies in the street, please.
Thank you, Ronnie. Please. Y'all, take that. Thank you, Ronnie.
That's all I'm saying. We can go up into another topic about that because I could really get deep into that, but I digress. We're going to stay on topic.
No, I mean, but that is appreciated because catcalling makes women feel unsafe. Sometimes it feels like if I don't acknowledge you, it's gonna get worse.
Listen, don't let a whole group of dudes be catcalling different things to you. So then somebody gonna be upset you ain't talking to them. And then what makes you, I think I'm going to all come over there. You know what I'm saying? So, yo, catcalling is crazy to me. I don't know. Fellas, y'all can hate me all you want. I don't see it. I don't get it. And I prefer not to even holler at women in the street, like in public, honestly. Especially, y'all got masks on. I need to see y'all grill now. Like, I need to see some teeth though, okay?
I appreciate you for acknowledging this new issue we have, which is being catcalled while I got a mask on. You don't even know what I look like. You are literally about control, dominance, my body, maybe.
Definitely your body, which is now you're like, over-sexualized, right?
Yeah. So it's like you literally don't know what my face looks like. Like, you might only see my eyes. If I'm putting my mask on right, you literally see my eyes up.
Exactly.
Huh?
Exactly. He could have said your eyes were pretty, or you know, it was your vibe, right? Your energy, right?
Sure. Sure.
Or your voice. Your voice.
Sure. I prefer what you said with it. I'm definitely not about to holler at you on the street. I don't even know what you look like no more. I prefer that because it was never okay, but it is the rational thought that it's like, it's even more not okay. Like, you literally don't know what she looked like. What are you doing?
Listen, I don't holler at women in the street because honestly, it don't matter what I say to you, right? I could be handsome. I could be smart. I could have mad money. But if you done turned down 30 dudes before I even seen you, I ain't going to be the 31st that's going to make you be like, oh, yes, hey, you already in turn down mode, right? So you're going to shut me down regardless what I say. And it's impossible for me to sound different from other dudes initially. Like, I'm sure they came up to you and said, hey, my name is such and such, or this, that, and the third. If you ain't turned off mode and you don't want to talk to nobody, you're not going to talk to nobody. And I refuse to sound like these dudes, which is why I don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Set yourself apart.
I try.
Before we get to our last segment, I'm surprised. I want you to paint a picture because, I've had conversations with women about dating and whoop-de-woop.
Right.
We're talking in a COVID world, not even in a world where it don't exist. What is the perfect date look like to you? Because I want our sisters to know that Black men still got romance. They out here. Because there's been a, like, there's no Black men kind of conversation. And I don't want Black women to manifest that for their lives.
Exactly.
So I want them to know that if that's what you want, if you truly, you know, from your preference, whatever your desires, if you really want a beautiful Black man, you can have that. I don't want Black women to feel unworthy or like come from a place of lack. So paint a picture for us and let the sisters know it still exists.
Well, the perfect date for me is, you know, first of all, you hanging out with somebody on a date now, you may be taking a risk, you know. It's clear you're going to be taking a risk, but some of us are single. And we want to do what we want, you know. So, I mean, if you're going to take a risk, so be it. But just take...
Let's say you vetted the person and y'all both got sense and ain't been around a bunch of other people.
True, but I'm just saying, let's take into the fact that if you guys haven't been tested, this person is so interested in you, so interested in you, that they're willing to risk their health right now.
Lord, they're going to live alone.
Listen, both of y'all are risking your health right now. But anyways, the perfect date for me, right? You both got tested, whatever. You guys, you know, the guy calls you up and he plans a date for you in terms of a picnic. He lays everything out for you. He has your favorite wine. He has some things that he made home cooked. He asks you what you like in advance, and he also orders some stuff for you. You know, you guys are chilling in the park under the sun or, you know, in the shade, wherever you like to be. You know, he gets a couple pictures of you so you can load it up on the gram and do whatever you do. This is just a date. You know, you guys are talking, very engaging conversation. You know, you guys are both drunk. You're, you know, not drunk necessarily, but, you know, tipsy. Y'all having fun. Y'all laughing. doing nice. It's a nice vibe, you know what I'm saying? And maybe the perfect date for me would be towards the afternoon turning into the evening, just to see the sunset. It's just you know, it creates the vibe to a perfect date, you know what I'm saying? And you know, you drop her off back home or whatever you do, you know. Or if you get lucky enough, if she chooses you, right? Just because a woman sleeps with you on the first night does not make her a hoe, fellas. She's choosing you. You didn't choose her, right? You fellas, we don't make. Listen, y'all can say I'm trying to get followers and all this, right? No, this is how I really think. Okay. We don't call the shots when it comes to sex, fellas. Like, if she chooses us, feel lucky. Feel that she don't choose everybody and she's happened to be choosing you to have sex with. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean that she's a hoe. Once again, that means that she likes you. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, I would want my perfect date if I'm feeling her like that. Yeah, and be hitting like, yeah. You know, of course. You get everything you want in a perfect world. A man would essentially like to have sex, right? Now,
okay. He's women,
you out there. You said what?
He's not celibate. You know, right. Some men be waiting to
meet even if a man is celibate, you know.
Okay.
But we're just saying what the perfect date can be. Yeah. Well, for me, I'm not expecting sex, right? A gentleman does not expect sex, but a gentleman also doesn't look at you funny because he got it sooner or later than what he expected.
Oh, can you say that one more time? Hold on. That was a nugget. Say that again.
So
a man,
right, does not expect sex. He should not expect sex. And he doesn't look at you differently because you gave it to him early or later. Looks at you the exact same way. So, ladies,
he should treat you the exact same way.
Wait, what you said?
You said he should treat you the exact same way.
Yeah, he's going to treat you the exact same way. Whether you make him
a real man,
whether you make him wait or you give it to him sooner, he's going to treat you the exact same way.
That is so appreciated. That is so, I know that is so appreciated. Thank you, Ronnie, for speaking on stuff that I don't know guy code and I don't care about everybody's codes. I never have. I follow my own codes, you know, but I'm seriously grateful that you said that because, you know, like we talked when we were, you know, texting or DMing weeks ago, it's important. Like I've said, that Black women know that, like, there are respectful Black men out there, and if I can use my platform to just start that conversation or stop someone from manifesting and they ain't shit saying that, because if you, the power of our words, we cast spells, so if you continue to say that, that is what you're going to attract. And so I want people to have courage to dream and to imagine their perfect date. Cause just like you said that, you know, a woman may be like, okay, I like this, I like that. And then, like, literally sit with that, close your eyes like a little girl, you know, like a teenager, and daydream about what that looks like.
Right.
That's how you manifest things. Imagine what that beautiful, true love that you want, that you are worthy of, feels like inside of you.
Right.
You know?
And I know it's hard for women to imagine that when they turn on YouTube or social media and they see these videos with, you know, guys doing this, smacking women or throwing a girl in the trash can. You know, every man is not like that. Hitting a woman with a skateboard, every Black man you see is not like that. And those Black men are scared of the real Black men that are outside. And you got to remember, like life doesn't matter to those Black men. Like, they're not concerned about Black lives. They're not concerned about blue lives. They're not concerned about white people. They're concerned about themselves. They're concerned about themselves. You know, I seen in a video when a girl got dumped in a dumpster. On a video the next day, the guy was like, man, I don't give a fuck about a Black life. And he said, I'll take a Black life right now. Right? He said that, and he was dead serious, and he wasn't racist. It's just the reality that these young men live in. They're desensitized to the fact that life is special. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that black men don't protect black women. These people that aren't protecting women, they don't care about nothing but themselves. They don't care about nothing but themselves. So I take it personally when women group all men in these categories, because they, because of more what they see on media is more what they think they know a black man to be. These are images that the world wants you to see more than the black family, or more than a successful black man treating a woman like a queen. You know what I'm saying? Let's normalize seeing these clips and sharing these clips, whereas opposed to the ones where we seen a woman getting punched in the face or thrown in the trash can. How many of the good clips are retweeted and shared more than the bad ones? So are we subconsciously manifesting negativity because of what we see? And if that's the case, then we need to turn it all off and go back to what we know, books. Let's read more. Let's experience the world more. Let's unplug social media for a bit.
Ooh-wee. Thank you. I love it. Okay. Think about what in the world and life, whatever you want, hurts right now, hurts you, hurts okay. to see, whatever. What do you want to heal and what brings you joy?
It's a couple things that are hurtful right now. Mm-hmm. I just want to say two things that are the most hurtful to me. Right now, I feel for any young kids who, or just, you know, any amateurs in the boxing industry or in amateurs in the boxing game that are wondering if their dreams are going to be put on hold due to this COVID situation, because pretty much these boxers are these amateur boxers, this is where they make their careers, to turn into a Floyd Mayweather, a Mike Tyson. This is where these guys are made at. So currently, due to COVID-19, there are no fights scheduled anywhere. So, you know, a lot of people are questioning, you know, if boxing is for them. A lot of gyms are closing down because they don't have the money to keep doing it. So one thing about boxing, boxers that are just starting out don't make a lot of money. Pros that just starting out don't make a lot of money. There is not a lot of money in boxing. But if you are a pro, these trainers that are training you at these gyms, they don't make a lot of money. They just doing it for the love, you know. So one thing that makes me sad is to see the dreams of young boxers or people who may have been on the edge, who, you know, are going to be too old or feel like they're too old. Their dreams just defer. You know, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or does it fester like a sore and then run? You know, that was who said that poem? Was it? Oh man, see, I don't want to quote the wrong person, but that was a poem that I rehearsed when I was in school. Yeah, it was Langston Hughes.
And it's at the beginning of A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry.
It was Langston Hughes. So. That was a poem I recited in school. But yeah, man, and it just, I hate to see dreams deferred and just what's going to happen to my dream. That's really sad to me. And the other thing that's sad to me is just seeing black women say that they don't feel protected. Just seeing, you know, the state of the black family. And you know, the media loves to say, black men, it's because black men are not at home. They don't have fathers. Well, let's think about it. Why don't these black men have fathers? Or why don't these black children have fathers? Is that a system, maybe? Systematic racism, maybe? That may have led to mass incarceration, that may have led to lack of opportunities. So we really have to sit down and think, like, why don't these black men have fathers? You know what I'm saying? And we just need to, just the whole landscape of the black community right now makes me sad. definitely makes me sad. And and we got to realize, like, everybody is not fortunate enough to have a strong woman in their family to raise a young man like me. You know, I'm surrounded by strong women. I'm surrounded by strong women. My grandma, my great grandma. You know, if I had role models, these would be my role models, my mother. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't raised by men, you know, but I was lucky. You know, a woman cannot raise a man. A woman cannot raise a man. It was things that my mother couldn't teach me, you know. And I understood that. I never faulted her for that. But just in general, the whole state of community, of the Black community, makes me sad. And, you know, this is why our fathers are in our lives. You know what I'm saying? And this is why I feel obligated to do the things I'm doing for my community, you know, training the young kids and giving them something constructive to do, or building a Black family. This is why.
And so that segues to, what do you want to heal and what are you healing? I mean, it's perfect segue.
And what I'm healing is I'm working on healing me, right, through my generational trauma. You know what I'm saying? Learning things that I haven't learned, you know? Like, for instance, Black people don't really know a lot about credit. We don't really know. We don't really know a lot about taxes. We don't really know a lot about investing, you know. And that's part of our healing, is to bring generational wealth. That's part of our healing and responsibility. And it's up to us to go ahead and learn that, make that part of our healing. Normalize Black love. That's part of my healing too. Maybe we got away from Black love due to lack of opportunities, and we tend to put money before love. You know what I'm saying? Before our community, before our values. You know what I'm saying? Let's heal and get back to that.
And what brings you joy?
What brings me joy is fighting. Fighting brings me joy. What brings me joy is being able to take what I've learned and pass it on to someone younger than me, you know? That's what gives me joy, seeing whether that was a boxing skill or just knowledge, you know, just seeing a young kid that may not have a role model, that may not have been as strong as me, to turn out as strong as I did, you know what I'm saying? Just having them look up to me and taking their, whatever I'm teaching them, and applying it directly, whether that was in school, whether that's in relationships, whether that's in business, whether that's in the ring and they catching a body in the ring, because that's what we do. I train them how to catch bodies. So that's what we do. You know what I'm saying? So all those things make me excited. And just watching people grow and seeing their change.
Thank you, Ronnie. This has been a phenomenal interview. I'm so excited to release it. Where can we find you? How can we support you?
So,
where are you at on the internet?
So on the gram, right? You can follow me at ronnie.love. That's ronnie.love. I'm also known as the Sandman on the gram, because I put people to sleep. My trainer gave me that name. I do training on the side when I'm not fighting. So if you're interested in coming to train with me, just hit me up on the gram and we can talk. I train kids. As long as they have the attention span to learn boxing, come on down, bring them down. I got them. I'll train them. I'm also a trainer at Everybody Fights. So when the gyms is open back up, come down to Everybody Fights, come train with the kid, and just look forward to me turning pro soon and making noise, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Thank you, Ronnie, for this excellent interview. Any last words of encouragement? You good?
I'm good.
All
I want to say is that if you really want to do something, or you have a dream, go out and do it. Go out and do it. If COVID didn't teach you anything, it taught you that life is not promised and things come out the blue. Who knew a pandemic was going to happen and would take out so many people that had so many dreams that they never got to accomplish, or that they were probably putting on the back burner. So all I can say is, if you got a skill, use it before you lose it. And if you got dreams, manifest them and go after it. Go after it like you hungry, like it's your last meal. You know when cartoons, when they put the chicken on a string and you on a treadmill? Go after it like that. That's how you need to be going after your dreams. Except you're going to catch the chicken this time. You're going to catch the chicken on the string. Right? You just got to go after it. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, all right.
Hey, before you go, this has been another episode of Inside Out Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or follow on Spotify. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, Yahright Productions, for more digital and visual content coming your way soon. Follow Inside Out Podcast on Instagram and follow me, Ms. Right on Time, on the gram and Twitter. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm your host, Yamoria Wright. See it. Say it, spell it, and don't wear it out.